A ship arrives at dawn, and a man who has waited 12 years knows his time of departure has come. This is how one of the most beloved spiritual texts of the modern era begins, not with grand pronouncements, but with a simple moment of transition. Since 1923, The Prophet has sold millions of copies, been translated into over 40 languages, and found its way into the hands of everyone from Elvis Presley to the Beatles. What makes this slender volume endure? Perhaps because Khalil Gibran understood something essential. The deepest truths don't need elaborate explanation. They need only to be spoken clearly, like water poured into a cup. As al-Mustafa, the Prophet, prepares to leave the city of Orphalese, the people gather to hear his final wisdom on life's most essential questions: love, children, work, joy, sorrow, and death. What unfolds is not a sermon, but a conversation with the human soul itself. Love beckons, and we follow, even when the path leads through fire. Al-Mustafa's first truth: love both crowns and crucifies us. It threshes you to make you naked and grinds you to whiteness, like wheat prepared for sacred bread. These aren't gentle metaphors. They speak to anyone who has discovered that opening your heart feels less like blossoming and more like being cracked open. The most radical insight challenges everything we've been taught. Love possesses not, nor would it be possessed. Real love creates space rather than closing it, a moving sea between the shores of your souls. The moment we try to capture love, to pin it down like a butterfly in a collection, we kill what we sought to preserve. This principle finds its fullest expression in parenthood. Your children are not your children. They belong to life itself, and we are merely the bows from which they are shot as living arrows toward a future we cannot visit. The bow's strength lies not in directing the arrow, but in releasing it cleanly. Every parent recognizes this bittersweet reality. Loving well often means letting go. This extends beyond biological parenthood to teachers who inspire rather than dictate, mentors who guide without controlling, leaders who develop rather than dominate. You give but little when you give of your possessions. It is when you give of yourself that you truly give. Generosity becomes spiritual practice when it flows from recognition, seeing ourselves in others, and understanding that separation is illusion. Al-Mustafa distinguishes between those who give seeking recognition, those who give from pain, and those rare souls who give from joy, understanding that to withhold is to perish. The most provocative insight demolishes the hierarchy of deserving and undeserving poor. Is not he who is worthy of receiving his days and his nights worthy of all else from you? Giving should flow from shared humanity, not judgment. The universe itself operates through giving. The sun doesn't withhold its light from certain flowers. When we give freely, we align ourselves with life's fundamental nature. Consider the teacher who pours energy into every student, regardless of potential. This is giving as participation in the cosmic flow, not as transaction. Work is love made visible. These words transform labor from drudgery into love expressed through action. Al-Mustafa describes workers as flutes through which the whispering of the hours turns to music. Meaningful work allows time to flow through us creatively. When the carpenter's hands move instinctively, when words flow naturally from the teacher, we glimpse work's sacred dimension. The activity becomes meditation. The product becomes offering. The hours become prayer. This vision rejects occupational hierarchy. The wind speaks not more sweetly to the giant oaks than to the least of all the blades of grass. The janitor who cleans with care performs labor as valuable as the executive who leads with wisdom. What matters is the spirit brought to work, not the task itself. Yet the warning is clear. Work without love produces bitter bread that feeds but half our hunger. If you cannot bring love to your work, transform your relationship to it, or seek work aligned with your heart. Your joy is your sorrow unmasked. Al-Mustafa reveals that happiness and sadness aren't opponents, but complementary aspects of one emotional spectrum. The cup holding your joy was hollowed by the same hands that carved your capacity for sorrow. Emotional depth works both ways. The deeper we feel pain, the higher we soar in joy. Recognizing difficult emotions as essential to our full humanity transforms how we approach suffering. The metaphor of the scale, with joy and sorrow as counterweights, suggests balance comes from allowing both their proper weight. Rather than asking, "How can I escape this pain?" we might ask, "What is this teaching me?" Every loss prepares us for deeper love. Every grief expands our capacity for gratitude. When sorrow sits at your table, remember that joy sleeps in your bed. What is it to die but to stand naked in the wind and to melt into the sun? Death, in Al-Mustafa's vision, is natural fulfillment, the river returning to the sea, the seed dreaming beneath winter snow. These images place human mortality within nature's larger patterns, autumn leaves falling, ocean tides rolling eternally. For life and death are one, even as the river and the sea are one. What if death weren't a fearful future event, but a present reality giving meaning to each moment? Awareness of limits makes expression urgent and precious. Only when you drink from the river of silence shall you indeed sing. Accepting impermanence frees us to fully express ourselves. The metaphor of earth claiming our limbs so we might dance suggests decomposition itself is return. Our elements rejoining the cycle, sustaining all life. This ecological perspective offers comfort through connection rather than individual continuation. We don't end, we transform. The wave returns to the ocean, which was always there. As Al-Mustafa boards his ship, he promises, "A little while, and my longing shall gather dust and foam for another body." The prophet will return, if not in form, then in essence. His final words reveal the deepest truth. "I have beheld the vast man in you." The prophet is not the source of wisdom, but its mirror, reflecting what already exists within. Only the seeress Almitra remains silent as the ship departs, remembering his promise. This feminine wisdom as keeper of prophetic memory suggests that while messengers come and go, the receptive consciousness that recognizes truth preserves it across generations. The prophet endures because it doesn't give us new information. It reminds us of what we already know. When we read about love or children or death, we recognize the truth immediately because Gibran articulated what our souls already understood. Perhaps that's the final wisdom. We are all prophets to each other, reflecting back the divinity we sometimes forget we carry. The question is not whether we have wisdom, but whether we'll speak it, whether we'll live fully knowing death awaits. The ship always comes. What matters is what we do before it arrives.